C3 Radio aus dem Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung. Am 15. Dezember 2021 hat eine Online-Veranstaltung der ÖFSE, der Österreichischen Forschungsstiftung für internationale Entwicklung, stattgefunden zum Thema COVID-19 and the Global South – Perspectives and Challenges. Das ist zugleich der Titel der aktuellen ÖFSE-Veröffentlichung Österreichische Entwicklungspolitik, die bei dieser Gelegenheit präsentiert worden ist. In dieser Ausgabe von C3 Radio berichten wir über die Veranstaltung und die Publikation. Es begrüßt Sie Jürgen Planck. Der Hintergrund zum Thema COVID-19 and the Global South Perspectives and Challenges. Die COVID-19-Pandemie hat Entwicklungsländer sowohl wirtschaftlich als auch sozial hart getroffen. Massive Einkommensverluste, Verarmung und steigende Ungleichheit, überlastete Gesundheitssysteme und ein Rückgang der Bildungsbeteiligung sind nur die ersten unmittelbar spürbaren Auswirkungen. Mittel- bis langfristige Auswirkungen, beispielsweise eine sich verschlechternde Finanz- und Schuldensituation oder sich verändernde globale Produktionsmuster könnten folgen. Entwicklungspolitik und Entwicklungszusammenarbeit müssen versuchen, solchen Auswirkungen entgegenzuwirken. Im ersten Teil der ÖFSE-Publikation werden die Finanzströme von Österreich in Entwicklungsländer analysiert. Im zweiten Teil werden eben die möglichen Auswirkungen der Pandemie auf den globalen Süden diskutiert und Wege in die Zukunft aufgezeigt. Im Report heißt es, Zitat: Advanced economies have been able to mobilize trillions of dollars in government spending and monetary injections to mitigate the crisis, roll out their vaccination programs and stimulate recovery. By contrast, a combination of precarious and informal employment conditions, high levels of debt distress, and insufficient fiscal and policy space have limited the macroeconomic response and recovery options in most developing countries. Zitat Ende. ÖFSE-Direktor Werner Ratzer spricht angesichts der COVID-19-Krise am 15. Dezember 2021 einleitend von einem unter Umständen verlorenen Jahrzehnt für die Länder des Südens.
The international community and in particular the European Union must urgently step up their efforts to find effective solutions at the global level. Also the Austrian government must do more and should in particular support efforts to scale up production of vaccines in the global south, including through supporting the suspension of patent rights on medical treatments at the WTO. Unless the international community finds comprehensive and proactive policy responses, the COVID-19 crisis will not only lead to another lost decades for many countries in the global south, but will have severe repercussions on economic and social welfare also in Austria and other high-income countries.
Michael Obrowski von der ÖFSE beschäftigt sich in seinem Statement mit Geldflüssen von Österreich in die Länder des Südens. Da geht es um Gelder der Entwicklungszusammenarbeit genauso wie um Geldrücksendungen, Remittances, die Menschen aus dem globalen Süden als Gastarbeiterinnen beispielsweise in Europa oder den Golfstaaten zu ihren Angehörigen nach Hause schicken.
An LDCs, an die wenigsten entwickelten Ländern, gehen allerdings nur geringe Gastarbeiterüberweisungen. An die Schwerpunktländer der österreichischen Entwicklungszusammenarbeit gehen sozusagen auch sehr wenig Überweisungen. Das ist vernachlässigbar. Insgesamt aber sind die Gastarbeiterüberweisungen an Entwicklungsländer mit 356 Millionen eine beachtliche Größe, die, wenn man so möchte, durchaus mehr Finanzmittel darstellen als die öffentliche Entwicklungszusammenarbeit, das ADA-Budget und die privaten Leistungen der privaten Organisationen gemeinsam ausmachen.
Die meisten Geldrücksendungen gehen in Länder wie Polen, Ungarn, Serbien und andere Länder des Balkans, so Michael Obrowski, der anschließend auf die Leistungen der privaten Entwicklungszusammenarbeit eingeht.
Da sieht man zumindest recht deutlich, dass mit 146 Millionen Euro Euro, die Spenden, Fundraising und anderen privaten Aktivitäten der österreichischen NGOs durchaus beachtlich sind und in den letzten Jahren eigentlich auf einem gleichen Niveau geblieben sind. Für 2020 rechnen wir mit einer Erhöhung. Was wir hier sehen, ist, dass in Österreich eigentlich auf der einen Seite die Mitgliedsorganisationen der KOO, der Koordinierungsstelle der bischöflichen Entwicklungszusammenarbeit und Mission, dass die einen zentralen Stellenwert einnehmen und insgesamt sozusagen die 10 größten Einrichtungen in Österreich eigentlich einen großen Prozentsatz abdecken, obwohl es relativ viele auch kleine Einrichtungen gibt. Aber wir haben es eigentlich mit großen Spendenorganisationen zu tun, die in Österreich durchaus relevant sind für die private Entwicklungszusammenarbeit.
An der Podiumsdiskussion zum Thema haben am 15. Dezember 2021 teilgenommen Richard Kosel-Wright von der UNCTAD, der Konferenz der Vereinten Nationen für Handel und Entwicklung, Jan Grumiller von der ÖFSE und Pauline Véran vom ECDPM, dem European Center for Development Policy Management.
You have worked extensively on the macroeconomic and financial implications of the COVID crisis on the Global South. Can you describe which are the most important implications and what kind of actions they do require as response?
Richard Kosel-Wright.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we are at the moment in a global recovery of some kind. You know, we estimates vary from 5 to 6%, but that kind of average figure is not very helpful as it hides huge asymmetries and a good deal of uncertainty surrounding country prospects and regional prospects. You know, one of the real sources of asymmetry and uncertainty right now with profound impacts on the Global South is, of course, the extent of the vaccine rollout. I guess I don't need to go through the figures, but they are extreme in their asymmetry. We've tried to make an assessment of what that means for the developing world, and other institutions have as well. Public-private partnerships are not the way to handle global health problems, that's for sure. That has been a fairly blatant failure in this crisis.
Und was hat sich noch gezeigt?
I think the other one that is a disturbing one for us. Advanced economies seem to be only interested in multilateral solutions when it suits them, rather than responding to the problem at hand. That's obviously the case with the issue around the waiver at the WTO. And the consequences of this are profound, not only for the developing countries that have been denied access to vaccines, but also, as we're finding out with the Omicron virus, there are blowback likelihoods from not having extensive access to vaccines across the globe.
Als weitere aktuelle Probleme nennt Kosel-Wright die weltweit anwachsende Verschuldung der Staaten, die steigende Inflation und
that old North-South divide, which is of course hardwired into the UNCTAD view of the world, certainly seems to have been exposed and exaggerated by the pandemic. But it's not just a cross-country, divergence is not just a cross-country issue. Obviously, we've seen very significant shifts in income distribution within countries. Wealth inequality in particular has risen dramatically over the course of the last 18 to 20 months. We know the figures about the rise of billionaires and the role of asset price increases in that story. That has all kinds of damaging and dangerous ramifications. And there are also important sectoral differences, which again have important implications for developing countries, the difference between manufacturing and service sectors, the exaggerated role of finance, the exaggerated role of sectors of the economy that rely on intellectual property rights, etc. So there's some real sectoral tensions also that have, I think, significant implications.
ÖFSE-Forscher Jan Grumiller beschäftigt sich insbesondere mit globalen Wertschöpfungsketten.
The discussion on resilience, on global value chain resilience, is mostly undertaken from a perspective of the global north and a focus on the global north. But what implications are there for the global south and what possibilities are there?
Yeah, it's definitely true that the perspective on global value chain resilience is mostly discussed from the perspective of the global north. And what we did in our contribution, we mostly focused on critical products, mostly medical products and pharmaceuticals, not necessarily vaccines. Of course, vaccines are now the most important issue. the COVID-19 pandemic only highlighted an already existing problem, namely that since the emergence and expansion of global value chains since the 1980s, multinational corporations have focused on structuring supply chains in the most efficient way and not in the most sustainable or resilient way. Okay, so in our contribution, we highlight that these issues exist in the case of various medical products and pharmaceutical supply chains. For example, we have seen that the security of supply for medical products during the pandemic was undermined since almost all medical gloves are imported from Malaysia, for example, and there has been a regional lockdown in Malaysia. So most countries in the global south, in particular in the case of sub-Saharan Africa, are completely import dependent with regard to basically all critical medical and pharmaceutical products. And we have seen in the case of vaccine how problematic this is.
In den Ländern des Nordens hätten Versorgungslücken etwa auch bei Halbleitern zur Diskussion geführt, sich künftig auf mehrere Anbieter zu stützen, beziehungsweise Industrien wieder in den eigenen Ländern, etwa in den USA, aufzubauen, so Grumiller.
With regard to policy recommendations for the Global South, I will only highlight you know, that given the financial and production constraints, regional cooperation in stockpiling and building up production capacities, in particular because you know, for many products you have you know, the economies of scale and so on, that will be incremental, and that these efforts, of course, should be supported by the Global North, but we see currently in the COVID vaccine discussion that, you know, it's difficult. There should be financial support, of course, but also with regard to technology transfers and, of course, introducing waivers for intellectual property rights and patents. I mean, in particular, in the case of vaccines, I think it's now clear that vaccine inequalities can only be solved once vaccine manufacturing is distributed.
So ÖFSE-Forscher Jan Grumiller. Moderatorin Margarita Langthaler wendet sich an Pauline Véran. Sie arbeitet für das ECDPM, das European Center for Development Policy Management.
Pauline, you're a specialist and expert on development cooperation and development policy of the European Union. What is the response of the European Union to the crisis? I mean, with regard to development policy. And do you think that there will be something like a lasting effect in terms of potential shifts in European Union development policy?
Yes, I think the pandemic has had an impact, a long-term impact on the EU's external action and development policy. The EU's response to COVID has been multifaceted in the sense that the EU leveraged its research and innovation assets, it mobilized funds and catalyzed multilateral action from various partners. And one of its most notable features of this response has been the Team Europe package that you might have heard about, which was launched in April 2020 and which aim to combine resources from the EU institutions, member states, and financial institutions. I think it's brought about 40 billion euros in resources so far. And it had three pillars. And one of them was to tackle the social and economic consequences of the pandemic, which got the most funds. And the others were strengthening health, water, and sanitation systems. And then finally, the emergency response to humanitarian needs. And both of them got a bit less funds. And this response very much focused on the Africa and the neighborhood. The EU's ability to follow up on its ambitions and its commitments to solidarity during the pandemic has been limited. And there are several reasons for that. And one of them is that EU member states are still very much struggling to find a balance between protecting their own citizens and ensuring a global fair response to the pandemic. The pandemic very much remains a test for the EU's international ambitions, especially in the area of global health. We see that very clearly now with the unequal access to vaccines, which has been mentioned several times already. And beyond this immediate response to the pandemic, I also wanted to highlight the fact that human development has gained some traction in EU policymaking. It has been reiterated in various EU policy frameworks in the past year, and it is a very strong European Commission priority. So there is an understanding that these investments in human development will be part of building or need to be part at least of building back better.
Pauline Véran stimmt Richard Kozul Wright zu, dass Investitionen in die Länder des Südens im Interesse des globalen Nordens sind. Und sie sieht folgende Entwicklungen.
The pandemic did bring some innovations to the EU's external engagement, but this was not only justified by the support to partner countries, but also very much by internal interests. And here I want to mention that the EU's response to the pandemic was very much rooted in a drive to position itself as a global player in a competitive and uncertain environment. And the Team Europe approach was clearly an attempt by the EU to bring more visibility to its action, counter other international players in the response to COVID. I do want to highlight though some opportunities and then in the current context. And then one of them that you might be aware of is that the year 2021 opens a new cycle for the EU's international cooperation with a new budget and a new multi-annual financial framework for 2021 to 2027. The EU now has a new financial instrument for external action, which was agreed upon earlier this year. She's called a very difficult name, the Neighbourhoods Development and International Cooperation Instrument, and the ICI, which is also called Global Europe now, much easier to pronounce. And it basically merges 10 previous instruments for that existed before for development policy and external action into one broad instrument that is 79.5 billion euros. And that merges foreign policy and development objectives into one more coherent instrument, let's say, bringing together different strands of the EU's action. I wanted to highlight a few challenges that are linked to the EU's development policy right now. And one of them is the fact that there's a high number of priorities on the EU's agenda right now, including the green and digital transitions, migration, strategic autonomy, which very much links to Jan's presentation. These are concepts that we hear a lot in the EU bubble now. And as a result, they take a lot of political energy away from other policy areas like human development, which, as I said, it is a high priority for the European Commission, but it does take a less political energy right now. I think that the challenge for the EU will be in the next few months and years will be to be able to link those traditional human development sectors, which are sometimes seen as charity, with more strategic EU priorities like digital and green, as I mentioned. There are very clear linkages to be made between digitalization and health and education, for instance, or health and the green transition. So there are key opportunities in my view. Whether that will actually happen, I think, is a bit unclear, and it will require some change in the EU's programming of its resources and more smarter investments at partner country level to be able to make those linkages. So very quickly, as a conclusion, my answer to your question, Margarita, would be that yes, the pandemic did bring some long-term changes in the EU's development policy and innovations, as I mentioned, around Team Europe and the EU's ways of working, more focus on certain thematic priorities, and also a sense of urgency that the EU needs to play a leading role in global affairs. But there's also a very strong path dependency in the EU's development policy and cooperation. There are now strong calls for international cooperation for a greener and fairer recovery. How Europe will respond to these calls will definitely impact its profile for the years to come. And they will also reveal how serious it is on its building back better and greener agenda. And there, I think a long-term and inclusive recovery will require strong investments in human development sectors. And that will need more than political declarations, but also smarter investments in partner countries, as I mentioned. Thanks a lot.
Dr. Wolfgang Lapoux from the Austrian Ministry for European and International Affairs for a comment from the perspective of Austrian Development Cooperation.
If you look at the agenda 2030, unfortunately, we can already say the Sustainable Development Goal 1, meaning ending poverty in all its forms and everywhere, will definitely not be achieved.
Auch die Erreichung anderer SDGs sieht Lapoux durch Covid-19 gefährdet.
If we look at the share of vaccinated population in our partner countries, we can already say COVID-19 will be there in our partner countries for a very long time from now. So it's not something which will go away. Most of you know that we are working on the 3 years program of finalizing the 3 years program for Austrian Development Cooperation at the moment. We could have dedicated the whole problem to COVID-19. Development cooperation is dedicated to fighting poverty and trying to leave no one behind. But this COVID-19 crisis has exacerbated vulnerabilities in a very clear way with public health systems and vulnerabilities in terms of poverty and unemployment. We hope to build back better. In the United Nations language, they even tried to call it building forward better and greener, meaning that we cannot go back to what we had and what we used to do. But unfortunately, we must admit, and it has been said, there seems to be some kind of recovery already. But there is no strong evidence that the economic recovery, which is occurring in some parts of the world, is based on new and sustainable ways of working.
Dr. Lapoux, there is another question by Werner Ratze to you. Health issues have so far not been a priority issue for Austrian Development Cooperation. The recent increase in the funding of the Austrian Auslandskatastrophenfonds, the funds dedicated to emergencies, notwithstanding. Wouldn't it be a good opportunity to introduce a new priority area, health policies, health governance, to Austrian Development Cooperation, given the lessons of the COVID-19 crisis? Do you see an opportunity to link up with the Austrian Health Ministry in that respect? Just to wrap up more questions, there is another question to all panelists here. What is the position of the panelists regarding a TRIPS waiver to support global vaccine production? And what should be the Austrian position within the waiver skeptic EU in this context? Mr. Lapoux, maybe you want to reply to the health question and then also your position on the TRIPS waiver.
On the health question, it's somehow easy. Of course, it's understandable that there are calls for including health programs into our focus programs of development cooperation. We used to have important health programs a long time ago. Now it's all a question of expertise within the organizations that we deal with. And it's all a decision of focusing. You cannot do everything. And at some point, the decision had been taken to slowly get out of health. Of course, if there will be change in the not foreseeable future, but in the midterm future, I cannot tell you. But right now, I just want to say right now, there are no deliberations to include health into the priority sectors of development cooperation. As I told you, the 3 years program is being worked out right now. And of course, COVID as such, the crisis as such, is extensively dealt with, but not on the level of investing in the health sector.
Thank you very much. So Jan, would you like to respond to this question, the TRIPS waiver question?
In the big discussion with regard to the TRIPS waiver question is the large companies that own the patents, they say, you know, it comes down to quality control and quality assurance, and it's incredibly complex, which is, of course, denied by many scientists. For example, the WHO chief scientist argues, you know, there's this medicines patent pool, which is a United Nations-backed organization that aims to bring back inexpensive drugs to poor countries. And, you know, they help companies to forge partnerships by identifying reliable manufacturers, assisting with regulatory approvals, and so on and so on. I mean, of course, in favor of a TRIPS waiver. I think it is certainly possible. And, you know, it took Moderna roughly 9 months in order to ramp up production. Probably for other companies, it would take a longer time for countries in the global south, but sooner than later, you should start technology transfer. You are likely to need a solution for the companies that invested a lot of money, but it's certainly a possibility. And as we have heard today, is that COVID-19, it will take years, and in particular in the global south, to tackle this challenge. So yes, companies in the global north have invested and increased their capacities, but I don't see any reason why we should, you know, wait any longer to start with technology transfer and to start ramping up production in the global south. As I said before, at the end of my presentation, I think it's clear that vaccine inequalities can only be solved once vaccine manufacturing is distributed.
Would you see possibilities for strengthening a more coordinated and coherent EU development response to the crisis? What trajectories for EU policy on international cooperation do you envision against this background?
I've got to say that 2021 was a bad year for multilateralism on several fronts. I mean, it's not just the vaccine issue, which on any account has been a disaster. But if we look at the G20 initiative around the debt service suspension initiative, for example, which, given the developing countries have accumulated an additional $500 billion worth of debt to get through this crisis, offering anything between 10 and 15 billion in debt service suspension, which is what the initiative has done,
is pretty pitiful in light of the scale of the challenge that developing countries actually are facing. And it's not even debt relief, it's suspension. They're going to have to pay it back at some later date when things get back to normal. I went to Glasgow, so, you know, my first COP. The lack of ambition around finance mitigation and particularly adaptation, but mitigation, the refusal to talk about loss and damage. These are pretty profound challenges that developing countries face, and that clearly the multilateral system as it's currently constituted is not taking these issues seriously. The advanced economies come muster $100 billion in 10 years. Developing countries say they need $1.3 trillion in annual financing to meet these challenges. The gap is enormous in that respect. And I think, you know, the problems with the trading system and the WTO, we had the difficulty of holding the WTO meeting, obviously, last month. But there's no agreement on any of the major issues under discussion in the WTO. They're all contested, and they all, to a large extent, fall along developing country lines. It's tough to see multilateralism in that context. Coming out of 2021, we're in glowing colors. I think the opposite is the case.
Das war C3 Radio, heute zur Online-Veranstaltung vom 15. Dezember 2021 zum Thema COVID-19 and the Global South – Perspectives and Challenges. So lautet auch der Titel der aktuellen ÖFSE-Veröffentlichung Österreichische Entwicklungspolitik, die man kostenlos herunterladen bzw. als Printversion anfordern kann, www.ofse.at. Folgen Sie der ÖFSE und C3 Radio bitte auch auf Facebook. C3 Radio gibt es wieder in einem Monat und jederzeit als Podcast auf Spotify und Deezer. Informationen zu allen Angeboten im C3 Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung in der Sensengasse 3, 1090 Wien, findet man auf www.zentrum3.at. Auf Wiederhören sagt Jürgen Planck. C3 Radio aus dem Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung. Mit den Organisationen Baobab, Frauensolidarität, Mattersburger Kreis, ÖFSE und Paulo Freire Zentrum. Weitere Informationen und Podcast auf www.zentrum3.at.